Listening to the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. I'm Scott Patton, your co-host, along with Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, how are you doing this fine day?
Winter's back, Scott. What have you done?
I don't know. I woke up this morning, and it's an April Fool's joke. What can I say? We had an inch of snow, and I assume you got a little bit up where you are, too.
No snow, just cold wind, like I can feel it blowing from somewhere. The Yukon.
Yeah, we're all getting ready for spring, and we've had a couple false starts. I don't know what to say.
I guess people were kind of confused about the global warming.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a lecture back in 1987 or 88 with Terrell Coleman. He was the CEO of the algae company. I forget now the name of it. Super blue-green algae, anyway. They were the first people that brought it out. And he was already then promoting, saying, look, the CO2 content of the atmosphere is increasing rapidly. We're going to head into real trouble. And it's not that the greater CO2 is not going to cause warming. It's going to cause greater extremes.
Yes.
He said it was going to be longer winters, more intense winters, more intense summers, greater winds, and more storms, and, general mayhem.
Yeah, and look what happened in Australia over their summer, our winter. They had some fierce, fierce firestorms in Victoria and New South Wales, and they had some, they had some evidence that some people had started a few of these fires, and
right.
They basically said, "This is we're calling this murder. If you start a fire and people die, you are a murderer, and we're going to be punishing you and prosecuting you from that perspective." And you know, I wasn't privy to all the editorials and the talk radio and all the stuff that was going on there because we live half a world away. But I certainly got the impression that everyone was right behind this guy when they were talking about that, because hundreds and hundreds of people died from the fires. People lost their homes, and the animals and the destruction was just awful. And they had extreme dry, hot weather. Any spark would just set it off.
That's right. I agree. We had a pretty nasty fire in the area where I live. Oh, a few years ago, I think it's about 5 or 6, and significant portions of the town actually burned. It was the funniest thing. It was the fancy upscale homes got it, because they all had these sort of mini acreages in the forest, or at least at the edge of town, right?
Right, right.
And it's right past them is this park, the federal, reserved land. And that whole thing burned. So now it's instead of a beautiful forest, it's just black sticks. And the part of town just burned down too. Many, many houses went with it. And it's very traumatic for the people that lose everything. And it's a boost for the economy, but it's a false boost, because, of course, you're having to spend money that you shouldn't have to spend again.
That's right. Yeah, doing it twice.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I want to go back to the increased CO2 content in the atmosphere, and how this, Al Gore and his people are just jumping to conclusions that are just wrong. You know, like he's calling the cause of this global warming increased CO2 content. In fact, the increased CO2 is tracking behind the climatic change, not in front of it. And, the cause of this weather change is actually outside of the realm of what we can easily do. Because there also was global warming on Mars and Jupiter.
Yes, I've heard that a lot of the planets are increasing in heat. But
right.
I'm not sure if that's coming from the sun or what.
Yes, it has to. There's no other place for it to come from. So, you know, when the sun is increasing its activity, it'll warm up both Jupiter, Mars, and the Earth. And no matter how many, I don't know what, windmills we put up, it's not going to make that much of a difference. But the second thing is the issue with the increased CO2 content in the atmosphere. That is no joke, because that truly does cause the greater extremes of the weather.
Right, right.
Neither here nor there, I don't feel like I have a whole lot to do with it other than the following. To produce a pound of protein that's vegetarian based, like hemp or rice protein or something like that, takes a certain amount of water and resources. To produce a pound of flesh, like in cattle or pigs, takes 16 times more of the energy, resources, water, and all of that. So the meat eaters are a much greater load on the planetary resources than vegetarians.
Right, right. And when you look at the population and actually getting food for the 6, 7, 8 billion people that are living here now, it seems pretty obvious that you have to go the vegetarian route, or way more vegetables and fruit than through the raising cattle. Because wasn't there talk in the Eastern Seaboard about all the methane gas that the cows were producing through their flatulence?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that would cause a lot of problems.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's one of the recognized global warming influences, indeed. Cow methane.
Kind of reminds me of my son. He was up here the other day, and he had a little CO2 explosion coming out of him. And I must say that we had to basically open all the windows, turn on all the fans, and leave the house for a couple hours as we kind of let this big cloud disperse.
Well, so, okay. Well, you know, when you have flatulence, the non-smelly flatulence is just CO2, carbon dioxide. That's just common, you know, like we all have some flatulence going on. That's just a common after effect of fermentation. But when it smells like this, that's actually mercaptans and other nasty gases. And those are a sign of stuff rotting inside of him. That is dangerous. That is not just, I ate something like beans. Because beans farts, they are noisy, but they are not that smelly.
Right, right.
But when you get the smell, that means that he's rotting on the inside. That is a serious cause for concern.
And oftentimes all we do is sort of laugh this off, which is one of the reasons why we brought it up, right? Is you sort of laugh it off. Ooh, you know, it's almost, you know, in the teenage and young 20-year-olds, it's kind of a badge of honor. And,
it starts in childhood. The fart jokes is just so common, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I understand.
And, he was quite happy with the chaos that he caused with his actions. But I really think it's really weird, because in our society, people don't like to talk about this sort of stuff. And it's, if you can look at the byproducts of your digestive system, you get a real insight into how your body is working, right?
Absolutely.
And I can recall when I was traveling through India and Southeast Asia, and you know, some places that were pretty were the 70s and 80s, that were you weren't sure when you ate, what impact that might have upon your health, right? So
yes.
And when I'm traveling, and I'm expelling, digested food or remains of digested food out of my system, I would always look and say, oh yeah, it's, it's shaped nice and it's not rancid and blah, 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 blah. And okay, I'm doing good.
Yes.
And course, in our society, it just gets, you know, plunked into the toilet and flushed down as fast as it can. And I'm sure, you know, if nobody looked at it, they'd be quite happy. But it seems to me that that's one way of seeing what's going on in your body. Is the stool nicely formed? Is it, you know, reeking of, you know, is it really loose? Or, you know, does it float? Does it not float? I mean, these are all questions, I think, that can give you an insight into, you know, how you're doing long before you have to go see a doctor to get something done.
Excellent points. In fact, your health truly does begin or end in the colon. I actually two thoughts come to me. One is my parents back in Europe have a toilet that's quite popular. I think about 30 or 40% of toilets in Germany are still installed in this style, which is the, it's not a bowl of water. It's actually a like a pedestal or like a shelf. So when you have your bowel movement, that thing that you left behind is presented to you right up there, not in water, but in open air, in open space. And when you flush, only then does it get moved into the water and disappear from view.
Wow.
So it's wonderful for me, of course, to come there and have the experience you just described, knowing exactly how I'm doing it in the digestive system.
Right.
Don't even have to look for it. It's right there in your face.
Yeah.
All you have to do is turn around.
Wow.
So anyway, Germans apparently are quite with it still, at least in large numbers. And I actually have on my shelf a book written by Bernard Jensen, which is Health Through Bowel Management.
Mm.
And it's one of those absolutely foundational works, you know, where he says, look, if you're sick, the first thing you have to address is your colon. You have to get that thing working. So going back to that smelly explosion, you really should look after the boy. Number one, he needs to get more fiber in his diet.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And he should probably meditate on what it was that he ate that that gave him that incredible experience.
Right. So for fiber, should I just go and like get some fiber cereal or more vegetables, or what would be some specific things that I might be able to get a 16-year-old to actually eat?
Well, all of the above, I suppose. You know, celery and broccoli is certainly more, you know, living food as opposed to all bran cereal. But even that's better than nothing. You know, the current average of North American fiber intake is somewhere around 6 grams a day. The sort of acceptable decent is 10 to 12. We should have about 30. And the ancient man, you know, the Stone Age tribe man, would typically have about 100 grams of fiber in his daily intake.
Wow.
So, you know, in the olden days, you would have 3 or 4 very large volume bowel movements that would guaranteed float. Because the more fiber you have in it, the more likely it is to float.
Can you say that again? How many bowel movements a day?
Oh, 4 or 5.
4 or 5. So if
big ones. Huge ones. Like, you know, monster size. 2-foot-long monsters.
So you would have to... So if you're going once or twice a day, you got to really pump up your fiber intake.
Well, let me put it this way. It's common for people to go less than once a day, and they definitely have an issue. Once a day is sort of marginal, okay. Twice or 3 times a day. You know, once for every major meal is pretty much what it should be.
Mm. Right.
You know, the transit time of maybe something like 12 to 14 hours. And you know, a bowel movement that follows a major meal. So if you have a breakfast at 9, then, you know, before bedtime, that's when it should be leaving you.
Right, Right.
And your dinner should be leaving in the morning.
So there you go, everyone. If, you know, if you're listening to this, how often are you going? When are you going? And you know, how? I guess another thing too is how hard is it to go? Like sometimes, you know, is it painful to go because the thing is just like a rock, or does it just kind of come up? So, Martin, you know, that's another, I think, another issue is, you know, sometimes I know I've had experiences, that, particularly in my youth, where like, oh, man, it's like a boulder trying to come out, right?
Oh, straining, yes, yes.
Straining, and really there should be no straining. So you're not enough water, not enough fiber, if that's the case.
Right. Actually, you know, there's also an issue with iodine. People who have deficiency of iodine have lack of urgency to go. You know, like, you know you should go, but there just doesn't seem to be, you know, like in the toilet, you know, when you push the flush, it actually goes.
Right.
In the same way, in the body that's healthy, you know, when the signal arrives, it's like the peristaltic motion of the bowel just goes squeeze, 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 and it all comes out. In a body that doesn't have that signaling, it just sort of like, kind of rolls out, and you actually have to really like force and breathe and strain and grunt and do stuff to get it out. Not so good.
Right, right.
Yeah, straining is definitely a sign of things out of order.
Right. And so what are some, okay, so making sure you got enough iodine, making sure you have enough fiber, making sure you have enough water. Is there anything else that, what about colon cleanses? Is that something that you should do on an ongoing basis? Would that help?
Oh, certainly so, especially if you're eating a high-protein diet, such as, the, you know, the meat and, you know, cooked whey protein powders. I, you know, there's a lot of weightlifters and the likes that believe that a whey protein is a way to build yourself up. I personally think it's pretty mistaken, but anyway, right. that causes these weightlifters, these smelly, gassy bowels. I don't know if you've noticed that or not.
I can't say I really noticed it when I was in the gym, but it's hard to tell between the sweat and the...
Yeah, it's a big room. No, it would be if you know bodybuilders or weightlifters, you would notice that they tend to be acidic, and they tend to have pretty bad bowels because they are, if they are not vegetarian, natural oriented, they would be buying things like the whey powders and have pretty smelly bowels.
Right, right.
Anyway, so that's that. You said what causes it at the most. Cooked proteins, either from milk or from meats, or, well, that's pretty much it, really. Yeah, beans can do it, too, because they're concentrated as well.
Right. Yeah, so if you're eating tons of beans and you were quite flatulent, that's not as big a concern.
True. Yes. Well, there, we solved the world's problems, didn't we?
The world's flatulence problem, at any rate.
Yeah, well, you know, go vegetarian and you will save yourself and your friends from the from the exposure, the nuclear explosion.
The nuclear explosion, that's right. Well, and also by doing that, you are helping to take some of the pressure off of our food system. Because really, you know, if we did eat less beef, if we ate less chicken, if we ate less turkey, if we ate less fish, if we ate less pork and venison and stuff, then probably we wouldn't have to produce. And I guess that, you know, that comes down to, it's interesting because at this particular time there's lots of talk of recession and how deep is it, and the stock market is, you know, we don't usually talk about economics, but the stock market's lost about 50% of its value. A lot of homes have dropped significantly in value, a lot of foreclosures, all those sort of things. And part of that is the result of always trying to grow. Like, if we weren't growing, if we weren't building more houses and everything else, and anything in life will grow and contract. You just look at your chest when you breathe. It goes out, it comes back in, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And you know, if we're always trying to create bigger herds and bigger stores and all these things and consume more, when does it kind of end? And maybe it would be a good thing if we had some contraction in parts of the food industry and expansion in other parts of it, like organic fruits and vegetables, which are maybe a little more, a little easier on the land.
That's right. Well, then it comes up with the word sustainable, right?
That's right.
Sustainable is an amazing word. It means something that you could actually sustain indefinitely.
Continue without destroying anything.
That's right. So, of course, the you know, burning down of the Amazon forest so you can graze some cattle on it, so you can sell your beef to the hamburger consumers in North America, that's not sustainable.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe for a generation or two, but not for 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we need to create dynamic systems that are sustainable, that that we can continue living with or in. And vegetarian approach to things is certainly a lot more sustainable than the meat-eating system.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that it's totally bad to eat meat. You know, some people do need to, especially depending on their body type, they should eat it. But they don't need the quantities of it that the affluent society, such as North America, is accustomed to eating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the typical farmer that we... Remember how we were talking about a few podcasts ago about the cultural source or origin of the diet that we're eating now?
Yeah.
You know, there was this farmer, you know, either working in the forest or working on the field, needing to consume 5,000 or 6,000 calories a day. That's how you get spaghetti and meatballs or pizza or something like that for your for your daily meal.
Right.
But that same farmer, you know, he would slaughter only one pig per season. He would only kill a chicken maybe on the weekend. You know, maybe on Saturday or Sunday for a festive meal. But it would not be a day, everyday experience. And it certainly wouldn't be that you would have meat 2 or 3 times a day. Uh-uh, no chance.
Yeah, they just weren't wealthy enough to be able to afford it.
Right. But that's also the case, how our style, how we should orient ourselves. You know, we should not be eating like kings.
When we're not kings. I think that's a great, great point.
Yes. And so we need to tell people that they need to think long term, and they need to think back to our origins, to think back what actually gave us the means or the lifestyle that, you know, fed us for generations, hundreds of generations.
Mm-hmm. Go back to the basics, in other words.
Yes, go back to the simple and plain, where sustainable. And, that's what this contraction could be all about, you know. Maybe the planet does have a consciousness of its own. Yeah, and it's just sort of telling us, no, you won't. You know, pull back, can't
pull
do
back.
It.
That's
yeah,
right.
The inhalation is over, it's time to exhale. I'm getting rid of some of this debris that has come in on the inhalation.
That's right.
Yeah.
And well, time will tell if we learn the lesson. And I think we'll learn it one way or the other. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, yes. I hear you. It. I heard this I think it was Oprah Winfrey's show, and she was saying, well, first you get a nudge, then you get a bump, then you run into a wall, and then the wall comes down on you. So, and that's, she was saying it in that order, is like, if you're not listening, if you're not paying attention.
That's right.
You know, like some people get it on the nudge.
That's right. Live a sustainable lifestyle in all areas.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Okay, so, well, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right. So, Martin, if somebody was thinking, well, maybe I'm a little more flatulent than I should be, or maybe I'm not eliminating as often as I should be, and I need to do something about this, and I don't know where to start. Where would you recommend that they start?
Well, the most common thing would be more salad, more raw vegetables, you know, the broccoli and the zucchini and cucumber, tomato, the works. We do sell a marvelous product called Exula Apple Fiber. Mm. You could find it in the Exula Single Foods, and this is an amazing product, because only a few companies in America are still using the old-fashioned style of making apple juice. You know, there are two methods. One is the centrifuge method, which takes out everything out of the apple. The only thing that's left over is just sawdust.
Mm.
The old-fashioned method is essentially just a bit of pressure, where you squeeze out the juice, and what's left is high pectin, high nutrient content of the apples. And so we're able to get that. That is, it's fairly rare. You know, it's not readily available. And so this apple fiber is just wonderful for anybody who would like to increase the apple fiber content in their diet.
Great. And it's not harsh on the body at all.
Mm-mm, no, not at all. And the other ways are, of course, something like konjac. You know, that's K-O-N-J-A-C. I don't know. Maybe we need to come up with another fiber product, because it's the soluble and insoluble fiber that a person needs. Psyllium is another popular high fiber product.
Right, you see that in a lot of health food stores.
Yeah, readily accessible. I did an experiment here not long ago. Did several products, teaspoon of whatever that was in a ounce of water, to see how it will expand. So I'm actually looking at adding a straight soluble fiber to our product mix.
Nice. So if somebody wanted to look at some of these products and get more information about it, where could they go?
I didn't give this much thought. On the Life Enthusiast website, under health education and nutrition, I suppose. There are so many ideas there. Nutrition, raw food, that would be probably a good place to start. And the product specifically, that would be the Exula Apple Fiber.
Right. Wonderful. And if somebody wanted to maybe talk to you a bit about the diets or any issues with their digestion, how could they get a hold of you?
Oh, well, I'm still here at 1-866-543-3388. And the website is www.life-enthusiast.com. And that's spelled ENTHUSIAST. Thank you for helping.
Well, I have it up right here. It wasn't hard to see. And if you're interested in listening to some of our previous podcast episodes, you can head over to lifeenthusiast.podomatic.com. And, of course, on the Life Enthusiast Co-op site, you'll see that there is a tab that says podcast, and you can certainly head over there. It'll take you directly to our past episodes. And we've got over 100 fascinating alternative health episodes up there for you to listen to. So lots of great information.
Indeed. So, I would like to actually help people with some digestive ideas. I have all of the superfoods on sale, 10% off, with the coupon IRD46. So, help yourself.
So, if you head over to the Life Enthusiast Co-op site and you want to pick up any of the Exula superfoods, just when you're going through the process, you'll see that there's a little coupon box in the shopping cart, and you just put in IRD46. I wrote 47 down, so I'm glad we did this again. IRD46.
Anyway, it's 10%. Better than kicking the shin, right?
That's a great deal, because they're excellent, excellent products. And you'll notice a huge difference once you start taking them, that's for sure.
All right. So I would say let's call it a day for today. Thank you, folks, for listening. This is Martin for Red Enthusiast Co-op, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. Thank you for listening.
Bye-bye, everybody.